Thousands take the written and physical exams to become members of the Fire Department of New York, but few are selected. While all of the other uniformed departments have taken steps to diversify, the FDNY has lagged behind, and there are just 300 black firefighters, or 3% of the total of 11,000, in a city of 2 million African Americans. Why are so few minorities and women qualified to join the department's ranks? Well, Ginger Adams Otis, a journalist who has covered the FDNY for years, looks for some answers in her new book, published by Palgrave Macmillan. It's called Firefight, the Century-Long Battle to Integrate New York's Bravest. And she joins us now, along with firefighter Regina Wilson and FDNY diversity advocate Lieutenant Michael Marshall. Welcome to our show.
Thank you
for having us.
Ginger, you begin the book with the story of FDNY Captain Paul Washington, a member of the Vulcan Society, going to East Harlem in February 2012 to help tutor people of color for the exam. Can you explain the history of the Vulcan Society?
Sure. The Vulcan Society is actually 75 years old, and it's a fraternal association of black firefighters. And it was founded about 1940 by a pioneering black firefighter named Wesley Williams. And there were a group of about 20 young black firefighters who were just joining the fire department then. It was sort of the first wave, and they were among his members. And the Vulcan Society has dedicated itself to black recruitment over the years, and they have actually done tremendous outreach. And as the association has progressed, they sort of started to target the hiring practices of the fire department itself.
And Regina, you are the first woman president of the Vulcan Society. Is that because you're breaking another kind of precedent, or because there weren't too many women in the Vulcan Society to begin with?
No, we've had members in the Vulcan Society, and also female members that have been on the executive board. I just made the decision to become president.
You made the decision, and people had to choose you, no?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it was a collective effort, definitely.
Now, Paul Washington, at the beginning of the book, was conducting classes near Engine 35, Ladder 14, which is nicknamed Heaven in Harlem. The physical description of the firehouse suggests it is anything but a heavenly place. How did you get that name?
Sure. Well, it's actually not too far from where I live, so I went over to walk around that when I was writing the book and to research it. And it's a squat little building. It doesn't have the charm of its name when you look at it, but of course there were two battalion chiefs who worked there, and they were legendary, and one of them in particular just really loved the neighborhood. It's a fast-action neighborhood, fast-packed, and there's a lot going on, and he decided that it was going to be called Heaven in Harlem, and that was its name.
He died at 9/11.
Correct.
Along with somebody else from the firehouse.
Two of them, yes. Sheffield and Marchbanks. And there's actually their names. I noticed when I was walking around, their two names are there on the street corner, their plaques. They both died on 9/11.
And are most of the people in that firehouse white?
Well, most of the people in all the firehouses are white. Majority of people in all firehouses are white.
So, Michael, what impact does racial disharmony have on the rank and file?
Well, listen, I mean, you know, there's been 300 of us for about 20 years. The numbers increase, the number's up to over 500 right now.
But it used to be 600. Well, at one point, it was 600 after a lawsuit.
It was 600 because we were after two lawsuits. The lawsuit which Vulcan Society sued the fire department in the 70s, which was nicknamed three-in-one list for every three firefighters hired, one had to be black or Hispanic. So we got a large number of minorities on through that lawsuit. And then the next lawsuit, which was Brenda Berkman's lawsuit for the women, we got a lot of minorities on that lawsuit because the list went all the way down to the bottom, and most minorities were usually in the middle or the bottom of the list.
So how long did that court order last?
The court
650, I guess, was the maximum.
That's probably where we peaked out about. But it started going down ever since then, because then they started hiring off a new list where they were just skimming the tops of the list, and the list, minorities are always in the middle or the bottom of the list. So when they started skimming the top of the next few lists, we came on at like 1-2%.
And that court order lasted 4 years in the 70s.
At the beginning of your book, Paul Washington is discussing the fact that the Vulcan Society's lawsuit against the FDNY for intentionally discriminating has made him persona non grata among the majority of white firefighters and among many of the high-ranking chiefs at FDNY headquarters. It seems like a very scary position to be in, given the fact that trust is such an important factor among firefighters.
Absolutely. I think probably Michael and Regina can speak more to that, but certainly I think I don't think any fear for Captain Washington that he would have a lack of support in an emergency or among his comrades, you know, in a situation that, where there was a fire going or something that was hazardous. But he definitely decided, he and Michael Marshall very strategically kind of decided that he was going to be the lightning rod. It sort of fits his personality. And Michael Marshall was going to, at least in appearance, be the more reasonable, approachable Vulcan. And
this is good cop, bad cop, Michael?
Well, it worked out that way. I don't know if we initially really planned it, but that's how it worked out because of our personalities.
Now, Regina, you're a 16-year veteran of the FDNY, former president of the United Women Firefighters Association, and, as I said, currently the first woman president of Vulcan Society. Have you felt ostracized by your white colleagues because of the lawsuit?
Well, I think what happens is a lot of times firefighters don't ask questions. So they make a lot of assumptions, or they assume that the Vulcan Society is thinking a certain way, or they think that the women's organization is responsible for some of the things that have happened in the department, when no one really asks the correct questions to find out what happened and why these things are taking place, or to even understand the unfair practices of the department. They never really seem to blame the department when most of the judges do, and most of the people in the city can have an opportunity to see what right and wrong is. But because they don't ask those questions, or they don't really want to find out what happened, they have a tendency to be upset with both organizations.
Do you think it's because they feel they did well on the tests they're in by merit, and other people are trying to get in through other means?
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it's because the practices have been so unfair for so many years that they don't see it. And I think because they feel like, well, I passed it, everyone else should. But when they were doing it, it was unfair. So people don't get an opportunity to see what the department does and how it affects people's lives on a day-to-day basis.
I want to get into how it's unfair in just a moment. But why did you join the FDNY?
Well, I joined the department. I was recruited, actually. I had no intentions or had anything on my radar of going to the department. I was recruited at a Black Expo many, many years ago, and I was approached by some recruiters that told me that it wasn't a lot of African Americans and females on the job, and
you're
that
a double
intrigued
whammy.
Me. Absolutely. So that intrigued me because I was like, well, this is supposed to be the greatest job in the world. Like, this is the greatest department in the world, and everyone looks, you know, to the fire department for guidance, and you know, they're like rock stars. So why is it that African Americans and women do not seek this as a profession? So that's what intrigued me.
My guests are Regina Wilson of Engine 219, a 16-year veteran of the FDNY, Michael Marshall, a 33-year veteran of the FDNY and the fire department's diversity advocate, and Ginger Adams Otis, who is a staff writer at the New York Daily News and also the author of a book called Firefight, The Century-Long Battle to Integrate New York's Bravest. It is published by Palgrave Macmillan. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Michael, as I said, you've been with the FDNY for 33 years.
Yes.
When you entered, were you a real rarity?
No, in fact, well, I was as far as total numbers were, but the firehouse...
Well, you still would be.
Yeah. At the firehouse I went to, I happened to be the seventh black that went to that firehouse, so I had plenty of company there.
Now you're at Canarsie?
Yeah, I'm in Canarsie. I'm assigned, still assigned to the Canarsie firehouse. I was there for 20 years until I came out to do the diversity advocacy position.
Why do you think the FDNY has lagged behind the other uniformed city departments in becoming more diverse? The police department has worked really hard to be diverse.
You know, we never had we don't have a lot of the leadership in the fire department isn't that diverse. And we've always brought the issue to the leadership, but they've just always come up short on acting. I mean, you know, it was a hard thing to do to change the written exam that they've had for years and years and years. You know, this is a job that doesn't take well to change, not only how they hire people, but, you know, even the way we fight fires and stuff. You know, it's just an organization that doesn't change, doesn't want to change.
And even with the recruiting process, I remember when I first came and began myself in a recruitment unit, it was really, we had two officers and four firefighters, including myself, who ran the whole recruitment unit. And so you can't have six people doing all five boroughs. And we will only recruit during the year of a test. So there was no full-time recruitment unit. There was no full-time going out into the community and engaging with people. And it wasn't until 2006 that they decided to now take a look at maybe hiring a full-time staff. But, you know, look at all the time that was wasted and lost and had no connection to the community or to offer them this opportunity.
Also, Leonard, I think the public perhaps doesn't always fully get the intense competition that there is to become a New York City firefighter, and they hire at a very slow pace, and that sets them apart from the other agencies.
Now, a caller wonders if minorities even want these jobs. How many minorities are even bothering to take the test? And beyond the fact that sometimes whether the test is skewed or not.
That's something that the Vulcans have actually tried really hard to address long before even this modern lawsuit. They were always going out to try to get candidates of color to come in and to take the test. And when I actually looked at the numbers of the test through the past 20 years or so, you could see that there would be a huge difference just in how many would turn out. There might be in one year, I think it was in the late 80s, there was something like 30,000 applicants, and 75% were white, and the rest were broken down between blacks, Latinos, and a few women. But at each step of the way, as they went along, a certain number of candidates of each group would drop out. The problem was that the number of blacks and Latinos and women who were starting were already so low that by the time you reached the end of the process, they'd be down to like 1, 2, 3%. It was very small. So even though there were those coming out, the process kind of, as it weeds people out, as it does to all groups, the impact was more severe on the people of color.
Michael, a year ago, March, the city agreed to create an executive staff position of Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, CDIO, for the FDNY, who will report directly to the fire commissioner. Is that you?
No, that's Pamela Lasseter. We advocated for two positions, diversity advocate and the CDIO. So I took the diversity advocate position, and they hired Pamela Lasseter for the CDIO.
And what is your job?
Well, I'm the diversity advocate. One of my main concerns is Proby School. I'm out at probationary firefighter academy every day when there's a class in, and I oversee and make sure nobody's, you know, everything's going okay. And if I think something could be going a little better, I'll bring it to the chiefs in charge of the training academy.
And people bring things to you, I assume.
Yeah.
What kinds of concerns?
Yeah. People bring a lot of things to me. Some of them I can make public, some of them I can't, but I always try and get their point across in my way to the administration so that they can be fixed. You know, I see myself as helping both sides, you know, helping the department understand what the problem is and trying to come up with a solution, not just finger pointing.
Ginger, you've been writing about the fire department for over a decade. Has the department been more proactive in trying to change the demographics of its ranks in recent years?
Yes, definitely it has been, and I think it continues to improve that. It's something that they're taking more seriously now.
Under Mayor de Blasio, I assume.
Under Mayor de Blasio, and toward the latter half of Mayor Bloomberg's administration as well, there were steps forward. It's glacial. It's slow. There's some real misunderstanding, some hardened positions and narratives that have gotten in the way.
Regina, Mayor de Blasio's administration announced last year that it would settle the 2007 Vulcan Society's lawsuit against the city of New York over two civil service exams found to be discriminatory against African Americans and Hispanic applicants.
Yes.
What were the problems with those exams?
Well, a lot of the problems with the exams were because they weren't job. They were questions that were job-related questions or questions that people ideally would have some type of knowledge in reference to firehouse settings or firehouse lingo that they would definitely have an upper hand on answering some of those questions. So we had an opportunity to have an outside agency come in and make questions that didn't really have any questions to do with working in a firehouse, because the average civilian wouldn't know some of those things that firefighters need to know.
And the reason that so many of the white applicants knew it is because they had family members who were already in the department?
Well, there's a lot of nepotism in this job, and that's clear and evident. And, I mean, people would have applications before some of the people in the city were, or they would hear about it and discuss it, and because some of the firefighters are volunteer firefighters out in Long Island and different surrounding counties, that they would get this information a long time, would be able to get this information out to their communities before the department sometime would be able to get that stuff out.
And another reason for the representation on the list, you have to be high up, and if you're not motivated, you're not going to be high up on the list. If you're motivated, and to be motivated, you need to know or have family or friends on the job so you understand what the real benefits and pay are. If you don't, you're just taking it like you take any other test for any other job.
And there are good benefits.
Yes, there are good benefits. Most minorities in the city don't know the benefits.
Didn't the city also agree to pay approximately $98 million in back pay and benefits to African Americans and Hispanic applicants who took two civil service exams in 1999 and 2002?
Yes. There's, you know, those tests were found to be discriminatory, and so there's back pay that's due to the people that should have gotten hired off of those lists, and also the people that have gotten hired but got hired later than they should have, delayed hires. And then there were some people that also got hired, priority hires that got hired that should have gotten hired back then.
Since the cutoff age for applying is 29, if some of the people who took the exam in 1999, 2002 were unfairly discriminated against, can they still apply even if they've passed the cutoff age?
Well, if they were priority hires, if they were offered those lists, they were offered the job, and they could either take the job or decline, and they'll just receive a monetary settlement. But a lot of them chose to take the job, and quite a few of them are in the job now.
Right. And what I wanted to kind of clear things up about a quick is that when we talk about people on the middle or the bottom of the list, you know, that's not people that have actually failed the exam. So people that...
Well, how do you wind up on the top or the bottom?
Well, you end up on the top because most of the time the fire department doesn't really hire you if you got below a 95 or below a 94. So someone, you know, in normal thinking, if you get an 80, you pass. If you get an 85, you pass. So we have those people in those areas, or people that have gotten 90s. We say that they didn't pass because they didn't get hired. It doesn't mean that they failed the exam. So that's for a point of clarity. So I don't, you know, because you have a lot of people saying, well, African Americans aren't smart enough or women aren't smart enough. It's that we did not have the opportunity to get to the level of being hired.
What about the physical exam? Is that held in conjunction with the written test?
Well, no, those were two separate things. So
you could do well on the written test and still fail?
No, what I'm saying is when we're talking in reference about this lawsuit, and my reference was towards people's ideas of failing the written test is something separate. Mm-hmm. In reference to the physical exam, that had nothing to do with the Volk Society lawsuit. So the physical exam is now a nationwide standard test. It's called the CPAT exam, which is the candidate physical ability testing. That's something that's totally separate.
And it's a pass-fail exam, physical exam.
And it's held in different states all around the United States.
But you have to write high in order to get to take the exam. And this current list, they're probably only going to get down to 98 or...
Oh, boy.
You know, right.
I would have been very happy with a 95 on an exam.
But you wouldn't get hired. And then you would be considered a failure, which is unfair.
Now, we have a call from Denver, of all places. Oh, Dave from Denver. Yeah. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Dave. I'm calling from Denver, and Leonard, I love your show, and I'm glad you're doing this piece. My younger brother is a firefighter. I think that your guest, Ms. Wilson, probably knows him. He started in April 2001 in engine number 5, ladder, engine 24, ladder 5, like right in the village.
So Edgar
fire
Hayes.
Department was one of the first ones to go in during September 11th. But long story short, he's in the Vulcan Society, he was, and I remember him telling me about the job after September 11th. He'd moved to the Nuss House in Bed-Stuy, and now he is in the firehouse a few blocks from the house where we grew up in New York, in East New York. But he was new in his firehouse, and at dinner one day, and I think this was a normal occurrence, he was telling me that as a young guy, he's sitting down at dinner, and it was normal conversation for a person 2 feet away from him to be in conversation with someone else and say, yeah, so I had to tell this N-word such and such, and then I had to say to another N-word, and my brother's sitting there like, you know, I can't sit here and just hear this, but I can't start a fight. I don't want to, like, just, you know, go get crazy. But so he decided, okay, I'm going to wait until after this passes to approach the guy and be like, look, I can't sit here and have you say that repeatedly. So he goes up to the guy, I'm just going to use the name Vic as an example. He's like, Vic, I heard you using the word, I was using the N-word a lot. Vic just looks him dead in the eye. He's like, yeah, what's up? I use that word a lot. What's up? And my brother said to me, well, telling me the story, don't tell my parents about the story because, you know, you can imagine it's a hostile work environment and you're faced with that. And what was important, what I thought it was important is because I was a management consultant living in D.C., and a lot of people who are not in, who are not a firefighter, don't know any firefighters, or may not know people that work in these types of municipal services, I would wear Vulcan stuff, to the office, and they're like, oh, so why do they need a black fire, a society for black firefighters in New York? And then I would tell them that story, and then they would understand. It's like, oh, like, yeah, it can be a hostile work environment, and you need all the support you can have.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear stories like that a lot, Regina?
Yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with the numbers that we're dealing with, I mean, right now African Americans make up only 5%. It's 83% white males. Women aren't even, we just reached a half a percentage. I believe Hispanics might be around 7-8% now. When you have those numbers that are low, when you don't have the opportunity to be expressive or to have the opportunity to have your own cultures and traditions respected in a department, of course you're going to hear those type of things.
We have to go to a little break. My guests are Regina Wilson, currently the first woman president of the Vulcan Society, a 16-year veteran of the FDNY, Michael Marshall, who is a former vice president of the Vulcan Society, currently the fire department's diversity advocate. He's a 33-year veteran of the FDNY. And Ginger Adams Otis, who has written a book called Firefight, The Century-Long Battle to Integrate New York's Bravest. It is published by Palgrave Macmillan. She is a staff writer at the New York Daily News. Stay with us for more. And we're back with Ginger Adams Otis, staff writer at the New York Daily News and author of Firefight, The Century-Long Battle to Integrate New York's Bravest. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan. Also, Regina Wilson of Engine 219. Is that how it's described?
Yes, Engine 219.
16-year veteran of the FDNY, former president of the United Women Firefighters Association, currently the first woman president of the Vulcan Society, and Michael Marshall, a 33-year veteran of the FDNY, the fire department's diversity advocate. He's a former vice president of the Vulcan Society and an officer at Engine 257 in Canarsie. Michael, the FDNY's the Vulcan Society claims that there was intentional discrimination. Do you think it was intentional?
Well, there were things that were brought to the mayor and the commissioner's attention that weren't followed through.
So, which mayor are we talking about?
Well, mainly Bloomberg.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the EEOC Practice Commission had written a report, and the fire department would just send back basically one line of saying we're addressing the issue, and that would be it. But in reality, we wouldn't be addressing the issue, and the problem would just continue. So it wasn't until we were able to get into court and force the administration to make changes that it happened. So, but, you know, the intentional discrimination part never ended up in court because they wanted us to settle, and we settled.
But when you say intentional discrimination, we were talking about how the tests were written. Do you think they were written very specifically to exclude African Americans and Latinos?
Well, they don't have to be specifically intentionally written to exclude blacks and minorities for there to be a disparate impact. And
are we talking about Asians as well being discriminated against?
Well, the lawsuit was for minorities, for Hispanics and blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was shown to have disparate impact. The intentional discrimination part was because people were notified of this fact. I mean, you had Congress people, you had council people, you had your own commission telling you that you were given a discriminatory exam, and it wasn't acted on. So what else can you, get from that except that it's intentional if people don't fix the problem?
Ginger, you began writing about the FDNY just as the Vulcan lawsuit was taking shape 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you met Paul Washington, Michael Marshall, Dwery Smith, who are all Vulcans. Mm-hmm. And you got to ask him a question at a press conference. You want to know why they thought they would end up in court instead of settling the lawsuit. What did they tell you?
They said that they were hoping to settle, but they could not get any traction with the Bloomberg administration, that they were looking to dialogue, but there was no reciprocation coming.
And they told you to ask Mayor Bloomberg.
Sure.
Did you?
I did many times as the chief leader where I was working at the time. And then over the years, even for this book, I did want to speak to him, but they declined to be interviewed. But there was no real clear-cut answer. And I think that it's a combination of many factors, actually.
When Judge Nicholas Garofis announced that he agreed with the Vulcan Society that there'd been intentional discrimination, Mayor Bloomberg filed an appeal. Do we have any sense why he was so unwilling to abide by the judge's finding?
The intentional discrimination, I think, very much bothered Mayor Bloomberg.
I mean, that phrase.
That phrase. And it definitely bothered the fire department as a whole and the officers there. The Vulcans had also named Mayor Bloomberg specifically, not just the city, but Mayor Bloomberg and then Fire Commissioner Nicholas Scapetta, which the judge had sort of tossed out, said they were indemnified, but they were trying to get that back on. But I think that this was one of those hardened narratives, you know, that people didn't understand, that the Vulcans had, over a period of time, amassed so much information, and the city. The other part of this, the fire department takes it on the chin for this, but the Department of Citywide Administrative Services, a very arcane kind of name and institution, they write these tests. And challenges to civil service tests were not new. They were somewhat new in the 70s, but they were not new by the time this started to heat up. And there were many going around, and there are still many going around. And this is a 100-year-old system. And the city has never been particularly proactive about updating its practices, adopting best practices, doing anything to really move that process along. So what happened was minorities were getting caught in this filter that had kind of been slapped onto a very competitive job because you have to find a way to rank people. They took the best way they could without much thought to what's the whole picture.
I'm sure there were many white applicants who were also upset by the standards that were being applied.
The other side of this, now the Vulcans won't really say this because their stated goal was to get minority candidates on, but absolutely, the white applicants turned out in huge numbers for these exams over the years. They've been the largest group of applicants without a doubt. And thousands of them, probably tens of thousands of them, were turned away from a job that they really wanted because they didn't score well on a written test on a Saturday morning with a number two pencil. And it was a test that was not measuring their aptitude for the job.
In the settlement of March 2014, the city agreed to undertake a number of steps to help increase the diversity of the FDNY. What are some of them?
Well, they're now looking into trying to figure out what are some of the reasons why during the time of filling out applications to the time of getting into probie school, where is the drop-off rates at? Also trying to do a better job in going to some of the communities, the focus and target communities, and do an outreach for more people of color and women as well. And just hopefully being able to sit down with some of the affinity groups and figure out what it is that we would like to have input in, and making sure that the things that haven't been done before that we don't mess it up and try and reinvent the wheel.
They've also tightened up on the residency, the 5 points for the residency, which was a big problem in the past. A lot of people that never lived in the city got credit 5 points for the for being New York City residents when they never lived into the city. And points are a big thing on this exam. In fact, if you don't get some kind of points, whether it's vet points or residency points, you almost don't make it to the top 2,000 or 3,000 of the list. Everybody in the top 2,000 or 3,000 has some kind of points. So that was a big thing that we had to correct or try and correct.
One of the goals, I gather, is to make the department more diverse, is to engage with the Department of Education and New York City colleges to create educational and other opportunities that will enhance the ability of minorities and women to pursue careers as firefighters.
Yeah, and we're in the process of restarting the cadet program that we had before that was linked with the community colleges. We're in the process, talks right now, of restarting that cadet program, which should help minorities come into the job.
The exams are only given every few years. Have there been any exams since this new agreement went into effect?
No. Exams are only given every 4 to 5 years. So projectively, the next exam should be somewhere around 2017. Hmm. So they're still working off this list that we currently have. They're hiring off of this current list.
A caller suggested that the big difference between the NYPD and the FDNY is that with firefighters, since they spend the night together, it's possible to be more insular. Do you agree?
Well, people know what police do. They see them. They interact with them in the streets. A lot of people don't know.
But you're living together.
Yes.
And living together means bonding, and bonding sometimes means agreeing on, let's keep that other guy out.
Well, I bonded in my firehouse, but it wasn't to keep other people out. But
What's wrong with you?
We do live together. And listen, you know, I don't want to paint the whole department as racist. There's a lot of good firefighters in the firehouse. Some of them just don't speak up when certain things are being done or certain things are being said. And hopefully with more minorities in the firehouse, those people will speak up, and the minorities that are there, you know, it'll become more of a level playing field as far as attitudes go in the firehouse.
Regina, can the Vulcan Society provide applicants with the kinds of terms that might very well come up on a test, or do you just want those terms, the other things that seemed a bit exclusionary, to be eliminated from the test?
Well, the last exam, all of those things that were in the previous exams were eliminated, and they didn't focus more on asking firefighter direct questions or, you know, in a roundabout way. They're focused more on what kind of skills you can bring. And some of them had to deal with personality. Some of them had to deal with how you see things, your outlook, whether you can work well with other people, whether you can be trusted. Those are some of the things that they, you know, that you would ask and look for in a candidate before you allow them to come into the fire department, and you can teach them the firehouse lingo and all of those things that are necessary to become a firefighter.
So did that have an effect on the results finally, who got in and who didn't?
Well, I think it had a great effect because a lot more minorities and people of color and women and in general were able to score a lot better with a fairer test and a fairer system and a fairer way of them getting on the job.
A listener asks, is the civil service exam for the FDNY the same as the one for the NYPD, as the NYPD offers them again and again and doesn't seem to have the same problems that the FDNY does?
No, the NYPD hires, it's a bigger force, and they hire much more quickly. They have a greater turnover. They need more people. They hire at a much more rapid pace. And that's really something that has constrained the fire department. And also, you know, the fire department has a real challenge in developing these tests because, as you pointed out, it's really hard to tell from a written exam that's sort of a cognitive-based thing how someone's going to react in the firehouse culture and in a fire or in an emergency. It's a tremendously stressful endeavor, and you need someone who's got a certain temperament, and you really have a hard time figuring that out on a test.
Ginger Adams Otis has been writing about New York City and local politics for over a decade. She is a staff writer at the New York Daily News and author of Firefight, the Century-Long Battle to Integrate New York's Bravest, published by Palgrave Macmillan. Michael Marshall is now the city's fire department's diversity advocate. Regina, Williams. Okay, well, I have to tell about an event. Miss Otis will be in conversation with Paul Washington, Mike Marshall, and Regina Wilson at Greenlight Bookstore on Wednesday, June 3rd.